This is The Topic is Trek, episode 89 for Friday, April 9th, 2021. Coming up in this episode, did Paramount finally read our memos? Is Star Trek coming to a town near you? How many Baku does it take to get to the center of an insurrection? All this and more right now on The Topic is Trek. What happens when we get to Enterprise Z? Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone. I was tempted in the introduction to say what happens when we get to Enterprise Z. So I'll also throw that out there. That says alternate title for
that's our European friends, right?
That's for our metric friends.
There you go. Well, My name is Clinton, and I'm one of your co-hosts here on The Topic is Trek. As soon as I can get my mouth to work, we'll go with that. So hopefully joining me, beaming in from parts unknown, first of all, with the new hit catchphrase that all the kids are talking about, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Thank you very much.
No. No. Reverend Chair might have been closer if you'd gone with that, but
Okay. All right, maybe next time.
And also joining me from parts known, I'm assuming because he's at the control board, is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Last again, but you know, I'm something of a big deal on the holodeck.
Yes. But are you that guy that with the nose who gets shot and all that kind
of stuff? He's only a big deal on the holodeck because he sets his program to be about, 3 inches shorter than normal.
Hey, I see. It's the story of hobbits.
Yeah. I feel like we should give an update as of the recording of the show this evening. The Voyager documentary Indiegogo now stands on the verge of $1.3 million.
And what was the goal?
$4. So that's amazing.
They've gone over the actual retail price.
Lots of stretch goals at that point.
It's over at this point, isn't it?
Is it over? Because they still have the list of stuff on the side, so it's possible that it is over. So I guess we're final figure of it. The final tally on the big board is $1.3 million in that case. I noticed that, I don't know if it was this way originally, probably was, but all the stretch goals that they had in the LCARS graphic on the page, the bottom of it, the disclaimer saying, well, these are theoretically things that will happen, but really Viacom CBS can say, oh, nay, nay to any of this stuff. So if that happens, we'll put the money someplace else.
Well, I have a feeling that it won't Cayman be a problem Islands. Because they did it through for the DS9 documentary.
They did. I was kind of surprised that, I guess, because it is a big chunk of change to do it, and it's up to the production company to do it, that one of the very last stretch goals was the HD footage like they did for the DS9 one.
Ooh.
Yeah. I had a feeling that the DS9 one, I don't know. I can't remember about the stretch goals because I didn't get in on that. But I wonder if that was part of the original plan here. Of course, they had it on the list to begin with because they did it.
Was DS9 done before the 15-minute rule came out, though?
Well, they had to work directly with Paramount to get this footage. They had to request the actual footage and then
pay for it.
Scanned it themselves.
So this doesn't fall into that fan film category.
No. This is doing the documentary and getting actual permission to use the actual footage of this. So it'd be the same thing with Voyager. That they'll have to do the same thing.
Well, we should ask them, can we have some of your footage and make a lot of money off of it?
Yeah. Hey, I did chip in, by the way.
Excellent. What is the bonus you're going to be getting?
I did the Replicator Coffee T-shirt. I'm sorry, Replicator Coffee Company T-shirt.
Cool.
Yeah. Although, grab a phaser, we're going to get some answers, was a close second in my mind. I like that one. or Tuvok Rocks. That's all right.
Tuvok's Rocks.
No, not Tuvok's.
That's well, sure. Yeah. We're just not moving any of those T-shirts.
Yeah.
Hey, Tuvok's can rock and roll at the same time.
Oh, yeah, true.
All right, let's get off of that because we're going to talk about Voyager sort of in a couple of seconds here. That means, of course, that it's time to open up Subspace Chatter, and I'm sure Charlie is just psyched as anything about it. What do you say, Charlie?
He's had his Rectagino today, I can tell.
No.
Okay. Don't need all that Subspace Chatter.
And apparently he did not like the Rectagino.
Sense the excitement in his voice this time?
Yeah, he was just all full of something. Something.
Yeah, something.
All right, so take us away with our first story. Oh, by the way, so the lead into all this is because even Craig was wondering, what do you mean that has Paramount Plus read our memos? As you know, a long-standing thing on this show is right after we record our show, then Paramount Plus comes out with news about Star Trek. Well, this time it actually happened a couple of days before we recorded.
So they got learning. Our notes. I see what you're going with. Okay. Learning.
All right. So Chuck, take us away with the first story.
Okay. Well, a few weeks ago when Kevin and Dan Hageman showed the first image of the cast of their upcoming Nickelodeon animated series, Star Trek Prodigy, something was missing. We didn't get to see Captain Janeway. And the series executive producers explained that if they had shown her, it would have been the only thing the internet would have been talking about. And you know what? They would have been right. They were right. On First Contact Day, which we don't need to tell all you people, Star Trek fans, but for those that are new listeners or maybe new to the franchise, April 5th, there you are. Well, as of First Contact Day, the Hagemans and Kate Mulgrew gave us our first look at the Prodigy interpretation of Captain Catherine Janeway. The animated figure has Janeway in a classic Voyager TV series uniform. One of the publicity stills also showed her with a mug, no doubt filled with the finest organic suspension ever devised. With it, one could probably defeat the Borg. I think they did. Well, the Hagemans then confirmed that the show takes place in the year 2383, which is, of course, post-Voyager in the Delta Quadrant. Our motley crew of misfits knows nothing about Starfleet or the Federation when they come across an abandoned starship. But there is something on board that will serve as their mentor, an emergency training program named Janeway. That's right. Move over, Robert Picardo. There's a new emergency hologram in town, and it actually has a name. The Hagemans also said that the group of explorers would be encountering at least one species with ties to TOS. The show is still listed as premiering, quote, later this year on Paramount Plus before it arrives on Nickelodeon.
The benefit of being a Paramount Plus subscriber is you get to see this.
As we saw in Picard, there were lots of different emergency holograms.
Indeed.
I'm your emergency change machine.
Yeah, I'm your emergency welder.
I'm your emergency jump-jaw bar.
I'm your emergency wingman. Wait a minute, though. Hold on a second. What's going on here?
I'm your emergency sous chef.
Getting all out of control here. So this, I mean, there are questions, of course, that get raised here still about, all right, so they're in the Delta Quadrant, and they come across this group of misfits, come across a Federation starship, first question. You know, because we still haven't seen the ship. We don't know what ship it is. I imagine it's not Voyager, but
so, a Delta Flyer.
Yeah, and this is a couple of salamanders on board. But
no.
So it has to have been at a point where Janeway would have recorded, or been, you know, like there's no knowledge of this any such program during the run of Voyager. So post-Voyager that she did it, and somehow this, it'd be interesting to see what this is, how this all works together.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe
some, well, it's got my curiosity for sure.
Yeah. Well, we also got our first trailer for season 4 of Star Trek Discovery.
Do tell.
Yes, which will premiere in late 2021. That's best we get for a date on that one. The footage shows clips from several episodes, so it's kind of hard to figure out the sequence of events. We do know that there is a gravitational anomaly measuring 5 light years across that is posing a threat to the ship and possibly worlds within the still just disjointed Federation. We get to see the return of the president of Navarre. We get to see Admiral Vance, Gabriel Burnham, and Saru.
Hooray!
See Saru in the background in a shot. If you had to look really quickly to see that he's there. And then I think there's a close-up of him as well. But the close-up, I don't think, has him in Starfleet uniform. But I believe when he's in the background on the bridge, he is in Starfleet uniform.
And they showed a scene of a shot of his buddy, his new buddy.
Was that, that looked like a Kelp? Well, it was, didn't look like a, it was a Kelpian, but I don't, was it the same character though?
Yeah, sure. I can't, my mind's blank on his name, but yeah, I think it was.
Solar car?
Yeah. Solar car.
Solar car?
Solar car, that's it. That's it.
We'll just keep throwing out names until we figure it out.
It's gone green. And speaking of green, there's something very familiar about this season because, of course, another season of Disco means another set of uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
This time, the classic gold, red, and blue uniforms are back in style. And at first glance, the uniforms appear to follow the color assignments of the TNG era rather than the TOS scheme.
Hmm.
And I find that interesting because you will now have two series that use a predominant, TOS colors for their uniforms, but they won't match up
with the TOS rankings. Yeah.
Because Burnham is in red, and then other members of the, Navin, and they're in gold. Then we have people in blue that are in engineering.
Science and medical.
Wait, no, blue in engineering doesn't make sense. When did that ever happen?
Well, sciences.
The sciences.
Medical and sciences.
Stamets is in blue. So it looks like it's matching up with TNG.
Anyway. Have fun, all you cosplayers, making new costumes.
I just finished my Discovery, first season costumes. Now I got to do another. Actually, to be honest with you, I like the colors. That's the one thing about Discovery that kind of, not really, I don't want to say bug me, but I prefer the colors than everybody having the same dark blue uniform.
Well, they had the silver version and the gold version, right. And that was it.
And the bronze version and the rose gold version and the
rose gold.
It really appears
the iPhones.
Yeah, exactly. And somebody was commenting that, well, what about the uniforms we saw at the very end of last season? And my impression always was that the uniforms that we see in that last scene when Burnham takes the center seat and says, let's fly, is that that was a dress uniform, that was not the everyday wear, because they're lined up in two rows to, have the captain come in onto the bridge and take the seat. So I never thought those were going to be the standard day-to-day uniforms that they would have. And what these appear to be is almost a mirror version of the gray uniforms, because the gray uniforms had like a stripe going from shoulder to waist of a muted color.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the color is the entire piece, and there's a dark strip that goes that same position, mm-hmm. shoulder to the waist. So it's
a while back there was an anime version of Star Trek that somebody was producing. I think we talked about it on this show, and there was some, concept art from it. And I'm when I saw the Discovery uniforms, I thought, wow, this looked kind of like remind me of that anime Star Trek, but that never came out.
The uniform that Michael had on that last episode almost reminded me of the motion picture gray uniforms in a way. Just kind of really kind of bland. But Clinton, I gotta back up to where you said we do know that there is a gravitational anomaly measuring 5 light years across. I think you should have said we do know that there's some kind of gravitational anomaly.
Sorry, axiometric. That
you sounded way too confident in knowing what it was.
Well, you know, Stamets said it, and I have to believe that's what it was. So I didn't put in some kind of, but we can retro that in. We can edit that in post,
or some type of. Right. We will also accept some type of. That's like Jeopardy. Right.
The judges have spoken. They'll also accept.
Well, we will go on to some type of further coverage from First Contact Day, and Craig's going to tell us about it.
All right, so. First Contact Day also gave us a teaser trailer for season 2 of Star Trek Lower Decks. As promised, Boimler is still on board the USS Titan, trying to understand Riker's jazz music references, which I thought was kind of funny. The various shots feature some classic Trek Easter eggs, including the Mugatu. But there were also two very specific announcements. First, Lower Decks has been renewed for a third season. I think we all agree. We're happy with that. Mm-hmm. And second, we have an actual premiere date for season 2, which is August 12th.
Yay, actual premiere date. Woo!
Yay. So that's our next Star Trek, it looks like. There is also an announcement about a documentary, Woman in Motion, Nichelle Nichols, Star Trek, and the remaking of NASA. The film, which shines a light on the work Nichelle Nichols did to promote diversity at the Space Agency, will be premiering on June 3rd on Paramount Plus up in the mountain.
That's very cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
They have to get the movie up to the top of Paramount Mountain first before they can show it to people.
And they reached their stretch goal, and they're going to redo her footage from NASA in HD.
I did not know that.
No, I don't know about that either. But the little clips they had looked pretty good. Looked like they showed some of the promotional things that she did, talking about, look like background footage that they NASA used from time to time, as well as other stuff. So I'm interested to see it.
And don't forget the infamous fan dance.
Let's forget that. That's not part of this. This is not part of this at all.
It's a low point in Star Trek, but okay.
We will not go there.
Wait, what movie was that from? I don't think I ever saw that.
Well, you're on your own to watch it then. We've started through that with you many times already.
Yeah, one too many.
Yeah. But this, we've talked about this documentary before because it was one of those Fathom event showings, and I didn't get it because that was in a theater and I wasn't going to go to a theater. So I'm very pleased to find out that it'll be on Paramount Plus because I do want to see it.
Hey, I would have paid to watch it online, but I don't think they did that. Mm-hmm. Instead of being at the theater, if you could pay for play kind of thing.
Craig, you're paying for Paramount Plus. You are paying for it online.
No, I meant for that. Never mind. You're missing what I'm saying.
No, we know what you mean. It was a special one time.
Yeah, I would have paid Fathom Events to watch it online the one time.
That probably was a case of rights, to do that. There's probably a whole different kettle of fish when you get into streaming.
Well, I think they have to show it in the theater to be eligible for some awards.
Yes.
That's why you see some movies, even though the theaters aren't very much open, like the Godzilla versus King Kong, they still show it in the theater. Other movies that have come out this year.
So just you're saying later on, we're going to see these billboards up along Hollywood Boulevard saying, for your consideration, Godzilla best lead actor.
No, Kong is the best lead actor. Kong! Which I still haven't seen that movie. I'm dying to watch it. I haven't watched it yet.
All right. Well, Chuck, anyway. let's reel it back in from Godzilla versus Kong to more from First Contact Day.
Topic is Godzilla versus Kong.
The Wrath of Kong.
That's right.
Viacom CBS also took First Contact Day to announce that Red Pop will be holding an official Star Trek convention at the McCormick Center in Chicago, April 8th through 10th, 2022. So you've got about a year to plan for this. At this point, the only announced guest is Will Wheaton, But more are sure to follow over the coming weeks and months. Unlike the Creative Conventions run Star Trek Las Vegas convention, Reed Pops... Craig, move your cursor. Don't be doing that.
I was trying to make it grammatically correct.
You're getting in the way. Your flag comes up and it's right over the words. Don't be editing what somebody's reading.
You mean like this? I'm sorry.
This is why we don't have a video feed of the show, people.
You'd see an arm stretch from one camera to the next and slap somebody. Yeah.
Across four, five states.
May I continue?
You may. Sure. And by the way, it's Creation Convention, not Creating Creation Convention.
Did I say creating?
Yes.
Okay. Unlike the Creation Conventions run Star Trek Las Vegas convention, Reed Pop's plan is to have the annual Trek convention move from city to city every year. That's kind of like Worldcon. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned in a previous episode, Creation will be running a Vegas Trek convention this August, but it will simply be billed as the 55-year mission, as they are no longer an official Star Trek convention.
Okay, if you're going to do the echo, don't do an echo while you're doing the echo.
One is reverb and one is echo. They're two different effects.
Yeah.
I really like this idea because, you know, Vegas,
We've been there.
Yeah, and I like the idea of everyone doesn't have to be able to get to Las Vegas. You know, I like the idea that this one's going to be in the middle of the country, and then you might have one on the East Coast, and then go back to the West Coast again. I'm much more of a fan of this, which is more of an old school, like Creation used to do, and I'm not sure which things they still do it for now, but even they used to have regional Star Trek conventions. They have a New York one, a Boston one, one in Florida, one in Chicago. Yeah.
Are they moving around the U.S. or are they moving around the globe?
They were, I believe they were just United States based. Okay. There were Star Trek conventions that were international. One in Germany was a particularly large one. I don't think Creation was involved with that.
Because I know World Fantasy Con moves all around the globe.
Yeah, WorldCon. Like, hey,
this year we're going
to
Sydney. Like, oh, that's not convenient.
Yeah, right.
Well, I liked WorldCon because that's the way we had a jumping off point to several of the trips that we took, like our trip to Japan and our trip to England.
Right.
So we would use that as the base and then do other things while we were there. Mm-hmm. So I find the same thing is true here, that you're going to be able to have different experiences, different places. Different people will be there. I think when it's in Vegas, yeah, you might have more people from the casts and crews because it's a shorter trip than getting everybody out to Chicago. But still, I feel like you'll have a different mix and a different vibe if you're in different places.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that idea a lot.
Good point.
But of course, the thing that everyone has been talking about is the fact that season 2 of Picard, which will premiere in 2022, will feature the return of a classic Trek character, Barkley. No, not Barkley. No. Yeah.
Star Trek Barkley.
Christy.
Kes. No.
No.
Q, of course. Q. Q was coming back, all right?
Which one? There were like a whole continuum of them.
I'm going to say John DeLancey because he's the one that we saw in the little interview section. So I'm going with that one. In a teaser trailer filled with Easter eggs, not only from TNG, but also Deep Space Nine, we end on a playing card that disintegrates, leaving only the letter Q, and we hear the trial never ends.
Oh, you need a reverb on that, my friend.
I don't have reverb.
Yeah. The trial, never.
Echo, never. Peering over Zoom, Sir Patrick Stewart and John DeLancey dropped a few hints about what Q's reappearance may mean. They hinted at a bleak moment in season 2's action that gets interrupted by Q's arrival. There were also strong hints that there will be time travel of one kind or another. Given Q's past appearances, we're betting that time travel is a sure thing.
Wait, if he's immortal, why does he look so much older than he did in the previous shows?
Probably to just make Picard feel more at home.
That's what Actually, that's what he kind of said in the interview. He said, I've adjusted my appearance so I would not make Picard seem out of place. You know, so man. I did, you know, I watched it when I first pulled up. I watched a couple of the Zoom Q&A things. Mm-hmm. And I went, okay, there's Patrick Stewart and John DeLancey. And I didn't put two and two together. And I pulled it up. And the first thing, Will Wheaton's got a big smile on his face. Well, I can't believe after seeing that teaser, blah, blah, blah. I can't, you know, I'm very pleased to have. I went, whoa, 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 whoa. What teaser? And I had to go back and it was the video right before that. But there wasn't any clue because the thumbnail, it looked like just a playing card on a table. So it's like, I'm not going to watch that. Let's go to the next one.
I'm being sold something by Hoyle playing cards.
Yeah, it's going to say this bicycle is after me to do something here.
Right. I watched it a little bit. I didn't watch the whole thing, but it was pretty good. John DeLancey's funny. He was on his boat or something. I don't know. Anyway, it didn't matter. It was pretty good.
Frankly, I'm shocked we came up with two playing card companies like that.
I know. Yeah. We're just talking about Vegas. We're kind of in that frame of mind.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it was unclear to me, though, from the interview, whether or not it's going to be a one shot. In other words, that he's in for the episode, which I think is going to be probably the case. But there were really.
Wait, you think he's going to be in one episode?
I just have that feeling, but I don't know. I just have because it sounds like they hadn't shot his stuff yet. And we don't really know when that actual interview was done.
Before or after the shooting, you mean?
Well, they're still shooting the series, but was it done before they started filming or like a couple of days in and they just hadn't started filming that part yet? So we don't, but.
Well, even Picard, Patrick Stewart said, he said, I'm sure he couldn't divulge a lot of stuff, but he says, there's some I don't even know yet. So, you know, I don't think he's read all the scripts yet.
Right.
At least that's what it sounded like.
But we get all these different Easter eggs in there, which kind of hint at the time travel because we do get to see the Stargazer as well as the painting that Picard always had in his office of the Enterprise, which is a poster that I have someplace that I got from Cheerios.
Well, I didn't expect you to say that.
That's the actual one. That's the actual one. He's got Clinton's Cheerios poster in his office in the 24th century. Somehow it survived.
See, I go, it's right over there. I pull it out and I show it to the viewing audience, but we have no viewing audience, so never mind.
We're going to have to get one of these days.
But there's lots of I can't remember the name of the tablet, but there's a stone tablet that's in Deep Space Nine that Sisko shatters, and the shattered pieces of that tablet are on Picard's table.
Is that the Bajoran Kira, temple thing?
Yeah, Kira and
they get obsessed with it in the holosuite.
Yeah, there's all this like Superman kind of laser
battling. No, Craig, you're thinking of the obelisk.
So that's in there as well. And I'm thinking, does that mean that we're somehow going to have Deep Space Nine involved in this?
I'm sorry. I was thinking on Deep Space Nine, that was one of the tablet for that old, it was an ancient city that he helped the Bajorans find.
That was the obelisk.
He broke it. He broke the thing.
Right.
Yeah. And everybody was like, what the heck are you doing?
Right. And it released this whole spirit thing.
Yes.
So the pieces of that are on his table. That can't just be by coincidence. That's the case. Cause why would you have something from Deep Space Nine on in Picard's, you know, holographic? Well, I suppose that could be his real study because he could have gone home, I suppose. I suppose that could be in France. I don't know if that's on the ship or whether it's at home or not.
Well, they did show the outside of his vineyard at the beginning of it.
Okay.
Or it could have been on the holodeck to look like his house that is a holodeck of the Enterprise.
Wait a minute. So he's being reincarnated as an android-esque kind of person. So is that really his vineyard anymore?
Ooh, that's right.
Mm. And does alcohol affect him?
The Romulans own it now, so it's like
yeah, he can't drink that Romulan ale anymore and make it work.
Yeah, if you can't really enjoy the stuff, it's kind of hard if you're, you know, you own a vineyard. All right. Well, I'm sure that's everything Star Trek related that we could possibly have covered, isn't that right? Yeah.
Hold on there, Clinton. Not exactly.
Okay. All right.
So we have links to articles and videos and a lot more about First Contact Day.
How many more are there?
There is 89. No, that's episode 89. There's at least 26 stories. I know. Anyway, so there's at least 26 stories. You can find all those links for all that stuff. Everything from how Wesley Snipes lost out on a Star Trek role. No, it wasn't Blade. And to look at the new USS Discovery pizza cutter, which I would argue is probably more accurate than the Enterprise one.
Absolutely. So, it was made to be a pizza cutter.
Yeah. So you can find all those links on show notes or on our show notes for episode 89 over at thetopicistrek.com.
I think Discovery was made out of a pizza cutter.
Indeed. Indeed.
Actually, that's the first thing I thought when I saw the ship started rotating. I went, oh, the pizza cutter.
Yep. Instant marketing merchandise.
Yeah. Give me one of those. Although, I don't know, then I'll have two Enterprise pizza. I can only cut so much pizza.
You'll be in the kitchen. Pew, 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 pew.
I'm for dinner. No, first I got this battle
going on. You can set up that last frame in the episode, the season one, where they both...
He's got a giant parsnip and the Enterprise is headed towards it.
Right.
All right. But on that said, it's time to disconnect from subspace chatter and I get to have my most fun part of the entire episode because I say... Goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
No.
Oh, this feels so good. It feels so much roomier in here as soon as Charlie's gone.
It's like a breath of fresh air.
Indeed.
He sucks the air out of a room.
He does.
But literally, he does. Well, he doesn't like you.
Yeah, so maybe we better be careful what we say from now on.
That's right.
All right. And now with an appropriate sound effect.
Oh, back to work. We'll go with that.
Okay, it's time to head out on our main mission. This time, we're taking a look at the 9th movie in the Star Trek franchise, Star Trek Insurrection. The story for Star Trek Insurrection was by Rick Berman and Michael Piller, both two very familiar names in Star Trek. Screenplay by Michael Piller. Directed by Jonathan Frakes. And it premiered on December 11th, 1998.
Wow.
That's right.
So long ago.
It's from the 20th century. Ooh. Exactly, Eric. Exactly. Take it away, Chuck, with a brief synopsis. Right.
A brief synopsis. While on temporary assignment to an undercover mission, observing the peaceful race known as the Baku... And they're so peaceful, you'll fall asleep. Data malfunctions and reveals the cloaked observation station, aka the duck blind, being used by the Joint Federation-Sona Task Force. When the Enterprise is called to deal with the rogue android, Captain Picard learns that it's not all as it seems. The Baku, those peaceful... slow-paced people. They actually have advanced technology, but they made the conscious decision to live a simpler life.
Oh, wow, man.
And just
peace out.
Hold in a peaceful, perfect moment. Well, they're
and
also...
now to Eden. Yay, brother.
They're also way, way, way older than they first appear. See, there's this metaphasic radiation emanating from their planet's rings that has rendered them like virtually immortal, man.
Far out, man. So, the restorative nature of the radiation also affects the Enterprise crew in various ways. Geordi finds his eyes have regenerated, and he no longer needs his ocular implants. Real Riker and Deanna Troi rekindle their long-abandoned relationship with razors and shaving cream. And Picard develops a relationship with the Baku woman, Ange. Ange? How'd you say it? Anise, that's right.
You didn't watch the movie?
I did watch the... I've seen that movie a million times.
Fell asleep again.
When I see her, I don't really think of her name. That's the... anyway. Moving right along. Hello, nurse. Anyway, so however, the Sona do not have the same good fortune. They appear as a decrepit race that must resort to medical techniquist to prevent...
Yeah, techniques. There we go. I've invented a word.
TechniQuest is actually a really appropriate word here.
We're renaming our podcast.
TechniQuest.
Deep
the topic is TechniQuest.
To prevent death.
Yeah. Their excessive use of cosmetic surgery gives them a mummified appearance. Admiral Doherty explains to Picard that the Federation is working with the Sona to make a better use of the planet's healing powers, and that it will require the forced relocation of the 600 Baku on the planet.
Now, some fun facts about Star Trek Insurrection. This is the first time in over 10 years that we see Riker without a beard.
Yes.
And it lasts till the end of this movie, and then he's back to having a beard again in Star Trek Nemesis. Early previews featured a cameo appearance by Quark, the bartender from Deep Space Nine. The scene was cut because director Jonathan Frakes thought it didn't work well for the film. That's right. Count it. That's the second time in a row where something from Deep Space Nine got cut out of this movie. Because I think the last time, wasn't it Sisko giving orders to that got cut as well. The original version of the fight between Picard and Ruafo, don't ask me to pronounce the names because I fell asleep during this, contains an additional scene after Picard was beamed away by the Enterprise. The bad guy fell into the planet's rings and was regressed into a young child. The scene was cut from the final film, but the younger version of the character is still listed in the credits.
I saw that. I'm like, young Ruafo? Where in this movie was a young Ruafo? There was no young Ruafo. I'm thinking
the skin was stretched extra tight.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Someone fell asleep in the skin stretcher again.
Yeah, he's still at large, by the way.
All right. So I think this is one we're going to have varying opinions on. So opening up the floor.
Makes you think that.
I don't know. The fact that I don't even care what these people's names are, is, I suppose, a clue.
Wow.
He's not even trying anymore.
I'm not even trying. Because this movie wasn't trying. Why the hell should I? That's my feeling is about it. I don't know. I mean, I'll kick it off and people can say, oh, you're dead wrong about all this stuff. To me,
Thank
you.
Yeah, I agree.
An extended Star Trek The Next Generation episode. They didn't even try to make the Baku look non-human. They didn't even try. This definitely was this television episode vibe of they're going to wear, you know, shirts and pants and they're going to look like people. And that's just going to be the way it is. And we'll
somebody was cutting the budget, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. The look of the sets, they had these on Star Trek The Next Generation, they tried to add texture on things and also did this in
stucco series
by having little doodads all over the place. And on the Sona ship, when they're on the view screen in another shot, you see it as well. There's just this pattern that's behind, it's like a white wall with this patterned scrim or ironwork or something in front of it. Just looks so cheap. And then you have Rafi, after he puts down his guitar, he's sitting on a couch looking out the window. They didn't even try on this movie to do anything.
Hey, just get the couch from the lobby. That's all we
did. Not even try. I felt like the humor that was so well integrated into First Contact was just lost on this. We were just like reset that button and just go back to being like an episode of the series. It had nothing epic about it. Nothing.
Well, if it was an episode of the series, would you have enjoyed it?
Yeah, I would have, because I would have felt like, yeah, you know, I'm watching.
I'm not spending $40 on this to see it in a theater. Yeah,
this is not a motion picture. This is just an extended, mm-hmm. you know, this is like an episode of the show that they, oh, we had this in the can, we filmed it, but we never got a chance to show it. Let's make it into a movie instead. But that's enough for me. So somebody else.
Craig?
I liked it a little bit more than you say, but
I will say that's a pretty low bar, Craig.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I know. All right. So first off, I agree with you on some of the sets and some of the special effects. It seemed a little bit on the
TNG. A lot of the sets side. Were reused. Like when they were holding mm-hmm. the people after they beamed them up onto the Sona ship, that was a Voyager cargo bay. They were clearly not trying to hide some of these.
Yeah. Well, for example, one of the scenes that does take me away a little bit is at the end when Picard and Rafu are fighting on the ship, and there's blue in the background. It looks like they didn't swap out the blue screen.
Yes, I thought the same thing.
It's like, wow, they just quit
for the effect.
Now that blue looks pretty cool. Just leave it. But hey,
somewhere in space, someone's going to have a blue wall, right? Why not here?
Well, I did like I liked the stuff at the beginning with the Gilbert and Sullivan and trying to get Data to come back to his consciousness or stop him or whatever they were trying to do. I enjoyed some of the humor that they had. Even some of it was a little bit goofy with the Data as a flotation device. Things like that were a little bit goofy, but I enjoyed it overall. However, I mean, it's actually one of those movies which I've been asking for. It's one where the villain is not the super focus. It was on the social message that Picard was pushing, and that was we're giving up our principles to move these people. You know, so that he was trying to stick to his principles and be a little rebellious against his orders to do so. So I think I like that because it's not just a full on action movie.
Mm. You know, did you get the impression I probably zoned out when the Admiral was explaining more about this, but do you get the feel? Well, I guess what Picard was trying to do indicates that no, that the Federation knew the entire situation on the planet, or were they just kind of like given the high level, you know, information and they made the decision based on that. And he was like holding back on all the, well, we're going to take them out of here. We're going to give these guys first go at it and all this kind of stuff. And they don't want to leave, but we're going to make them leave and we're going to hide. And so what I'm saying is that Picard is rebelling against the idea that this goes against the ideals of the Federation. But you get the sense that the Federation really didn't know what was going on there.
Mm-hmm. Doherty knew what was going on. Doherty knew full on. So and he said that the command to relocate these people came from the council, or there was some leadership that
control
that said this is what we're going to do. Now, whether he divulged all the information, maybe he just said, hey, there's this non-indigenous race on this planet that's claimed it for their own, and we've got this super duper energy source that can help billions of people. What do you say we move them? maybe it was just kind of glossed over.
Well, even Doherty kind of turned at the end. So I wonder if he was actually pushing his own agenda a little bit more, because it was so remote, they had to go through extremes to get out and get a message to Starfleet. So he could have said anything and somebody could have just taken it at face value because they couldn't go verify it. Right. So I'm not sure if he was 100% on the up and up.
Right, because that's the whole point of the Enterprise leaving, to go out of the Briar Patch.
Mm-hmm. To get a message out.
To get a message out that this is actually what's happening.
And he told the Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo was in this. I've not known that before, but it's true.
He said, send your ships. Like, okay, maybe we need to stop them. You know, I have a feeling he was even more selling his principles.
Yeah.
Well, he was kind of in for a penny, in for a pound at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He kept digging himself in deeper and deeper and deeper.
Right.
And, you know, you have to clearly make him an unlikable enough character to match up with the end that he gets.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of stretched to death, I guess, is, I'm not sure exactly what was going on there, but it appeared like somehow that's what was happening to him. That he was getting one of those.
Well, I've always been interested in the holodecks. I thought it was always a great concept when we first saw it in TNG, and of course the different ways they've used it. So when we saw the ship, and he's like, oh, a holoship. Ooh, that's pretty cool. I was interested in that. I thought that was an interesting concept.
There were some issues with that, though.
There was some issues.
First of all, they're standing on the beach. A Data walks down, opens up some damn control, and the lake goes down. Clearly,
hey, language.
Some control of the dam. Damn control.
So the lake level goes down, yet they're still standing on the same shoreline and walk out on a dock. They row up to this holo ship, step onto the holo ship, but yet Anij is thrown overboard and it's about 12 feet to the water. How did we suddenly lose ballast on this ship or something? There were just all kinds movie of these physics. Little, yeah, there were inconsistencies all over the way. The movie promise. It had promise because it started out with this wonderful action scene of Data going rogue, and you're wondering, oh my gosh, what's going on? And it had a beautiful opening, and it just sort of hit the molasses swamp when you start to get to know the Baku. And it lost a lot of energy, but yet later the Sona are trying to abduct them off the planet. We're back to the action scene. So it was just this up and down. And when I saw this movie was going to have F. Murray Abraham in it, I'm like, cool. From Mozart, you know, from Amadeus, we're going to have, you know, he's an accomplished actor. He's like Sir Patrick Stewart, man. He's right up there with Christopher Lee and all these wonderful actors. And he did his best, but it wasn't enough to save this movie.
Well, did he, when he gave that scream?
He was screaming a lot.
No! Yeah. I was like, why?
Well, he was trying to stretch his skin once again.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he springs a leak in his forehead.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a solidly directed movie. I liked some of the goofy humor. I'm not saying it's a great movie.
There was some good humor in there. Yeah,
like, I enjoy watching
you
know, it. Yeah.
You Klingons don't do anything. It is a gorge.
You know? or I'm feeling aggressive tendencies here.
Yeah. And have you noticed your boobs getting firmer?
Yes.
Not that we care about such things.
Yes, Worf is completely confused by that statement.
Hey, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Clinton. I got one more point, but I'll wait.
Well, no, you have a cave-in, and the cave-in doesn't get Picard at all.
You know, the cave-in.
He just gets up.
They're out of that cave-in in like, about 30 seconds. Well, that was quite the cave-in. Yes, it's very, very devastating.
Well, when you've got Worf and Data lifting heavy rocks, you can go pretty fast.
That's right.
So that was my point.
One thing that Anij said was, she said, why do you need warp drive to take, all I could do is take you somewhere else from here. But my first thought was, but you used warp drive to get there.
Yes.
So what if you didn't have it to begin with? I don't know. They were playing that whole nature versus technology in your life. And I get that a little bit, but I think that it's a little misplaced when the only way they survived was with phasers shooting the little drones, you know, and
the drones that all came in from one direction.
And then they hovered all together before attacking.
Right. Like, it's like
synchronized.
It's like a standoff. You know, so who's going to play first? That's
not your mission. We have to have the dramatic scene of Worf and Data. And Marina Sirtis, and just pan across the group while the drones silently wait there in midair. No, ain't happening, people.
I thought, I did think that their nature versus technology premise was a little off because they needed the technology to actually beat, you know, or stay on the planet and not be killed. So,
anyway. Right. At least they were practical about it, though. Didn't go, well, we can't possibly, you know, get involved with this type of thing. It's better we should give up the planet than to blah, 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 blah. You know, at least they did have the sense to run away.
Why didn't Rolfo and the sonar, why didn't they just
the sonar?
I love the
sonar. Excuse me.
Perfect for this movie.
Yeah. Why didn't they just go live on another part of the planet?
Well, that's,
call it a day.
There were only 600 people on the whole bloody planet. There's plenty of planet to go around.
Well, they take this like there's a 5-minute scene where they try to explain, why this has to be the way it is, and none of it makes sense. And you know, Picard should just keep coming back, going, "Yeah, but there's 600 people. They live in that one village. You know, they every single time. But there's 600 people. They just live in that one village.
There's
just 600 people. They live in that one village.
How Admiral, you're not listening to me. There's only 600 people." Yeah, that. I mean, I guess the movie would be over in about 10 minutes, but
a lot of movies would be over if they made sense.
Yeah,
and people told the truth. You wouldn't, if people told the truth on TV, you wouldn't have half the plot lines of half the shows.
I'm making a good judgment call and recall this movie, you know, quickly. But I liked it better than you do. It sounds like
I didn't mind it, but it is definitely not up there in the top five.
No, I agree. I enjoy watching it, but it's not five.
If it's not part of an assignment like it was this week, I probably wouldn't be reaching for it on the shelf.
Yeah, I saw it when it first came out in the theaters, and I think this is the second time I've watched it. And I thought, and I said to my wife, Bonnie, I said, you know, it's been a long time since I saw that movie, and didn't miss it at all.
Hasn't aged well.
I mean, the effects are better than they were in First Contact, and they were good in First Contact, but we're now seeing the maturing of that, all the technology to the point where you're just using it all the time, except for a blue screen.
This was also a bit of trivia. This was also the first time that all the space scenes, including the ships, were CG, no models.
Oh, really? Okay. Yep. To also put a point on this, I do love the look of that Enterprise E and wish I could see it some more.
Especially when it's smoking out the tailpipes being chased by another ship.
Oh, speaking of which, that is the one. Okay, that is something that also takes me out. Not just the blue screen, but Riker pulling up the joystick to fly the ship. In the theater, I remember going, what the heck is he doing?
Now, we also got to see the first use of the captain's yacht, although the ships have had captain's yacht for a long time. That's the first time they actually used one. And the joystick. We'll have to switch to manual control. Like, well, wait, what? When did this happen?
Why didn't we do this a long time ago? We got to have all these people on the bridge.
somebody told me this much sooner.
Data, you got the week off.
Yeah. Data, man the joystick. I'm going to bed. So yes, that was stupid. I didn't get that part. I'm surprised. Jonathan Frakes, he's the one that grabbed the joystick. He's directed the movie. What?
No.
He's a control freak. Badoom. Hey.
And I will also argue that all of the characters had something special. I did like Geordi's moments where he wanted to see the sunrise.
Expression he had on his face was waiting for the sunrise. You could, that was a good expressive moment.
It's genuine. That was great. I liked that little exchange. But Dr. Crusher, they don't give her crap. I don't think she does anything in these TNG movies.
Well, I was also very concerned because, again, I hadn't seen it in a while. Because in the first part of the movie, Worf is just like the punchline to jokes, you know, he gets a pimple and so forth. It's like, okay, we got to do something with Worf, right? And I'd forgotten that he actually has some good fight sequences in here.
He took down Data in the beginning.
Yeah, but the early part of this was just
the remote control.
He had his remote control because he didn't have the joystick.
don't go there. He is fully functional, but
we First Contact. I was pleased it didn't stay there, but I was just also it's like, can we just stop with the machinations of explaining how Worf gets there? Worf is just going to be there. You don't have to have these long things. Probably if you didn't mention it, no one would even care.
Did he just walk through the door? I wouldn't care. And I mean, like, oh, cool, there's Worf.
Yeah, hey, what?
Data, how did you get here?
I've been assigned here since.
Yeah. It's a long story. We don't like to talk about it. Okay, there we go.
Because he just showed up in the last one. Well, he had a little more reason to show up last time in the last movie.
So, yeah, I mean, but yeah, he had a lot of like, you know, he's supposed to be the tough guy. And I understand against playing against the type, but make sure he has something really important to do as well, because that is important. That is necessary.
Eugene Chaffaw. We got to see the white dress uniforms. Those were nice.
We didn't get to see Will Wheaton, who was supposed to be in it.
Well, was he in the next movie in the wedding scene?
I'm sorry, it was the wedding scene. That's right. They cut it. I remember you can see it on YouTube, I think, if you search around. That's right.
All right. Do we have anything else to say about Star Trek Insurrection?
Time for the ratings.
All right. What are we rating on a scale of for this one?
1 to 10 collectors. Was it a collector or injector? They kept switching those terms. The collector was the ship. The injector was supposed to go into the rings and do the work. But at some point he said, launch the injector. It's like, no, you were just referring. They mixed that up. Okay. So there was plenty of love to go around in this movie.
Right. The injector collector and the
1 to 10 injectors or collectors, whichever you prefer.
Okay. Who would like to go first?
You. I want you to go first. Yes.
All right. I'm going to rate this as a movie. I'm going to rate this 3 injectors.
3.
I win.
Oh. I guess 1.
Oh, well. That's lower than most cartoons.
Yeah. Now Eric really has something to laugh about. So.
And then you...
What are you mumbling about?
I have no idea at all, Eric. All right, let's do
Craig. Craig, you went second, so let's hear your rating.
All right. I think I'm going to give this a 5.5.
You said you liked it.
I did.
That's harsh.
No, is it harsh? Is that too low?
That's middle.
That's what I'm getting at. Meaningless, you know.
Yeah. Well, the reason I gave it 5.5, it's. I think it's a solid movie. It's good, but it's not great, and it's not terrible. It's right in the middle. It's like Garfield. You just kind of like Garfield. You don't love Garfield. You just kind of like Garfield.
Oh man, you are.
Is that what you're saying? Okay. There we go.
I think you just pissed off some listeners with that one. Some
what?
Loyal Garfield fans out there, you know. Oh,
well, actually, that's what Jim Davis was shooting for. He made a character. He said he wanted people to just like, not really hate or, you know, overly love. Just so he got a good, anyway, go, you can read about it.
Because on this show,
the topic is Garfield. There we go. All right, that leaves you, Chuck, to kind of be the
arbiter of truth here.
The medium.
What did you say, Craig? 5.5?
Yeah, I wanted to be in the middle there. I that's a
you know, like, the middle is 5. Movies. The middle is 5.
What would you rate Star Trek 5?
Or what no, did we're we not rate going Star- back there. We did that.
Okay.
This is above Star Trek 5, and since I can't remember, I'm going to give this a 6.
Okay.
Ooh. Oh. Wow. Okay. Well, wait a minute. I am too low then.
You can't change. This is.
I don't remember.
Wants to.
I'm gonna look at my contract and make sure that's the case. I'm not sure.
I read it over very carefully just now, and it says that yes, you can change if you want to.
It says right here in the Holy Bible, Podcasting for Dummies: no changing your vote.
6.5. I'm going with 6.5 because I like it better than Chuck. Yes.
Okay, that's fair. You did like it better than me. You said that.
All right. Now that's our opinions, but I'm sure
what a chaos.
Lack of it. There's no lack of them.
Yeah, but I'm sure you have your own. So feel free to let us know your opinion, your rating, the things you loved about Star Trek Insurrection, the things you didn't care so much for in Star Trek Insurrection, and anything in between. You can leave a comment over on our Facebook page. Look for The Topic is Trek over on Facebook and tell us what you think of Star Trek Insurrection. Clearly one that has a variety of opinions, and we kind of like that because if we all like the same things, things would be boring. All right, it's time to come back from our main mission with an appropriate sound effect. Good enough. Let's go on our warp speed roundtable with an appropriate sound effect.
You want two? Oh my goodness.
Breaking the banker. There you go.
The sick bay scanners. You can dance to this.
I think your Fitbit's going off.
First, we have some old business to take care of here. This is not necessarily related to the warp speed roundtable, but a comment that was made in the last episode of the one before that, saying why that was referred to Mr. Worf in the show.
Yes.
Well, listener Diane says, in response to Chuck's observation that Worf is always referred to as Mr., she writes, all lieutenant commanders, lieutenants, and ensigns in the U.S. Navy, which is the basis for the Starfleet rankings, yes, are addressed as Mr. And she gave us a link that details all the different ranks and all the ways that everyone in the Navy is referred to in the various, you know, formal, informal ways for the different ranks.
Well, very nice. I'm just saying it's inconsistent with the way they address the other members of the crew on the Enterprise.
Yeah, a little bit, but they never say Mr. Crusher to Dr. Crusher.
You mean talk about Dr. Crusher?
Yeah, that's what I say. Yeah.
Mister. Yes, you said they never say Mr. to Dr. Crusher.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, we got lots of.
What else do we have in the feed bag?
So we asked about the worst job in Starfleet, and listener Diane again said, she said damage control most of the time would be drill, 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 and then cleaning up dead crewmen. You don't want that.
But you know, there's a healthy sale in the store on red shirts because they're always needing more.
There are.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, I did get, go ahead. You got a couple more in there.
Well, those are the ones that I think that you, so Jeff responded saying anything that requires you to wear a red shirt. So keeping with that red shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Gary said that holodeck organic material removal seems pretty disgusting to me.
Right.
I agree with that one. And John says the replicator that replicates mayonnaise. The devil's vile sauce will never be welcome in my universe.
It always has to be clean because that stuff goes nasty so fast.
Yes, I worked.
So wait a minute. Is he talking about mayonnaise or salad dressing? There's a difference, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He said mayonnaise right there.
Right.
And the time before that, we asked if you could make one meal with a replicator that would, and who would you share it with? Which Star Trek character would you share it with? Ken answered lasagna. Not with Garfield, but with Sulu.
Oh, my.
And Poez replied, 10 chocolate sundaes with Q.
With Troy.
10? Okay.
10 of them.
Because they're calorie free because they came out of the replicator.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And this time around, we're asking a question, and I think it's related, obviously, to the movie that we were just talking about. And this is kind of the overarching story with Geordi. So I'm asking the question, should Geordi have kept his visor? So I'm talking about the entire run and if he's going to be showing up on Picard. So every time we saw Geordi, should he have kept that visor? Now, we know why one of the main reasons that Geordi no longer has the visor in the movies is because LeVar just didn't want to wear it. Because
mm-hmm. it's hard to see. Can you blame him?
Hard to get emotion across with it. So that's the reason why we're not seeing it. But do you feel that removing that handicap that was put there kind of on purpose, that difference that Geordi, despite what we in 20th or 21st century would refer to as a handicap, it was just differently challenged and was able to do everything that anyone else could do. And that kind of got fizzled away as he no longer needed it. And, you know, his eyes in this movie, it's even to the point where everything is regenerated.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is that I would like to have seen him keep maybe not that visor if LeVar had such issues with it, but a visor of some kind to just shine a light on that fact that that's something that someone can relate to, right? That has challenges,
mm-hmm.
and see someone overcoming them, to just say, oh, those challenges are just gone over time, that not working around them, they're just gone. They're just gone.
Well, in many aspects, the visor gave him an advantage. You know, right. I can see the whole EM spectrum before my eyes.
And obviously the things that he couldn't see, like a sunrise. Well, he couldn't see a sunrise in the same way that everyone else would experience them. So mm-hmm. there were things that he had to trade off for that. But they had discussed a lot of that previously. So I feel like he should have kept at least a version of the visor. What say you?
I can clearly see your argument. Yes.
No pun intended there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it reminds me that when Picard is leaving to go in the yacht, does he make some reference to?
How could I, you know, appreciate what I've got or words to that effect, knowing what it costs?
No. He said something like, it would be like the blind leading the blind or something as he's leaving and looking, you know, it's like, oh, Geordi's right there. Really?
Too soon. Yeah. Too soon.
Yeah. Too soon.
Anyway,
no, I definitely agree with you, Clinton, that a lot of Star Trek has been about, you know, bringing, you know, what some people would say, hey, you know, they've acknowledged me. I feel appreciated. They continue to do that with Blue on mm-hmm. Discovery. They even did this back with Plato's Stepchildren, you know, right. when they were bringing on little people and, you know, Larry Nemechek has had a couple of interviews with that gentleman and said that one of the guys has said, I felt validated when I saw a little person on Star Trek mm-hmm. playing a role like that. Or Nichelle Nichols' role. I think that's one of the strengths is the Idic concept in Star Trek. And yeah, there's kind of a loss that Geordi no longer has that characteristic, I'll call it. I wouldn't even say a handicap, but it's one of his standout attributes that makes him who he is. And yeah, they could have changed the styling so that he didn't have to have prosthetics glued to the side of his head to keep this clip on his face. It could have been change it up for some stylish Ray-Bans or something. You know,
Geordi, what are you doing? I'm chilling.
And you look like Ray Orbison or Roy Orbison over there.
That's right.
Ooby dooby. Sorry, that was the last show.
Let's put it this way. I can't really blame him for not wanting to wear it. I think it would be aggravating, especially if you've been wearing it for the whole series and then a movie and a half. But as far as the character goes, I think that I didn't mind the contacts. You know, we had the contacts they showed, they were kind of doing it, but it does take away a little bit, I think, from what you're saying is having a blind engineer actually, you know, making the ship run. I think that was kind of powerful in itself and interesting to see when in the series. So mm-hmm. yeah, they probably could have just had something maybe on the side of his head and put a couple of contacts in and not necessarily a visor, but, I don't know. In the context of this movie, I thought it was a sweet scene and I had no problems with him not having anything when his eyes were came back because it added to the story. But far as the character goes going forward, maybe a little something. Maybe it had been different. I could have been different to make LeVar Burton feel more comfortable, but
right.
Can't really blame him for not wanting to wear it anymore.
Yeah, I feel like in a way, that scene of him looking at the sunrise would be more impactful if he still had the visor up to that point, but he'd already
really? Got
to the point where, right. Because we'd already gotten to the point where he doesn't have it. Like the last movie, he didn't have a visor.
Right. He had the more of a bionic eye.
So yeah, you've already kind of disconnected from that a bit. And, you know, it's almost like I'd like to have seen him take the visor off and say, I don't need this while I'm here, you know, and I want to be able to savor this because I've never had a chance to experience this before. I just feel like it would have even been more of a gut punch, you know, to do that.
And they should have given him a little thing like Rutherford had on Lower Decks, you know.
Exactly.
Where it comes around his eye. Yeah. However, I still like the character Geordi, so either way, I'd still enjoy the character.
Indeed. Indeed.
I hope that we see him on Picard.
I hope so too. I think he's probably just, I just imagine Geordi is sitting in a corner someplace after seeing the entire, you know, fleet yards just blown up, going, oh, well, yeah, all that work, that was,
right.
Just kind of, you know, being a little inward introspection for a while. Well, about
maybe LeVar Burton's waiting on that Jeopardy call.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
So am I. So am I.
Don't know what's going to happen with that, but we'll find out in a couple of weeks, I think.
Chuck's contract. Hey, you have to use my ServiceNow application. Jeopardy.
All right. So that's our opinions on the Warp Speed Roundtable. You might also have an opinion about that. So we ask you to answer the question, should Geordi have kept his visor? And I think we're all in agreement that it didn't even have to be the same visor, because we do know that LeVar had problems with that visor.
Yeah, there you go. The Chuck's got the right idea.
Just move your headphones down over your eyes.
There you go.
It says Sennheiser. No cross promotion there. They could have even had a humorous moment, like his eyes regenerated. He's still wearing the visor and he walks into the door going, oh, looks like I'm looking through a picket fence. What's going on here?
You know, it would have been more impact what you were talking about with the visor. If he was watching the sun, what if he was standing up there and you knew his eyes were regenerating because of everything that's going on? And he actually took it off at that moment to see the sunrise. Well, that would have been
what Clinton was saying.
That's what I said.
Is oh, I take it. I got you. I'm sorry.
Someone wasn't paying attention again.
No, I was thinking.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I like the Tin Man.
You're like Ralphie in the waiting in line for Santa. Go away. I'm thinking.
Yeah. I like the Tin Man.
I like the Tin Man.
All right, but it's time to refill the dilithium chamber, and please try to warp on out of here. We've got this lovely dilithium from the great train robbery from a couple of weeks ago. So
hey, the next movie we're going to review, of course, is
Star Trek Nemesis. The one where we really like the deep fake version of Star Trek Nemesis better, because it works a bit better, but that's not what we're reviewing. We're reviewing Star Trek Nemesis. All right. Well, you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. Right now I have going on the April Podcast a Day Spectacular, an episode of a 30-chapter story called The Slow Down. And we've already had some very special guest appearances on the series.
Yeah. Had some great acting on there. It's beautiful. It's like, yeah, Emmy. Do they do Emmys per podcast? No.
We'll work something out. All right. So beside Eric, who speaks for you guys?
I'll speak. You can find us by searching for Technorama Podcast on the internet, or you can go to chuckchat.com/Technorama to find our show, which is nerd humor and some news too. We do have some news stories in there as well, so always a fun time. Been doing that for since 2005. I'm not even gonna try to do the math tonight.
16 years
coming up on 16 May 1st. Oh my gosh, that's coming up quick. That'll be our anniversary. So yeah, having a good time. Technorama Podcast.
All righty, but now it's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on
the red
shirt. We did well.
Look, and none of us made a joke.
I want to get those Sona, like, facelifts, you know?